So a raccoon, you know, they're very cute. And raccoons are known for watching their food. Somebody gave the raccoon a big cube of cotton candy. And the raccoon took it, put it in the water, and guess what happens to cotton candy? It was just gone. And the raccoon is waving his little paws around and looking around trying to figure out what happened to his cotton candy. I'm sure they still fed the raccoon. But in spite of what happened to the little raccoon, washing your hands is a good thing, right? Washing our food is a good thing, yes? There's nothing wrong with any of that. Now, sometimes we look at these old rules of the Pharisees, and they're just legendarily silly. You know, worrying about whether or not there's a nail in your sandal that might constitute a burden, that you're not allowed to bear a burden on the Sabbath day. Those sorts of rules that just become silly. And it's easy for us to steer, but we should remember that they actually begin in a good place. It is a good thing to wash your hands. It is a good thing to wash your food. The problem is when we take those actions and we make them into something that they are not, when we lose sight of the purpose and we make them the sum total of our faith. And so the Pharisees were looking at the disciples who didn't wash their hands, and instead of just realizing their hands are dirty, they thought, oh, the traditions of the elders say you must wash your hands before you eat. Therefore, you must be a horrible person because you don't live by the tradition of the elders because you didn't wash your hands. You see, what they do does make a difference. Washing your hands is a good thing. But they lost the sight of what was behind it, of the meaning and purpose of it. Jesus' point, I think, is really pretty clear. And truthfully, I think it's much more threatening than just whether or not our hands are washed. He says that it's not what we take in from outside of us that makes us unclean. Because that, as he said so eloquently, goes into the stomach and on out into the sewer. It just passes through. Remember once as a child I swallowed a nickel. I don't know why, but I did. My mother called the doctor's office and she was assured, don't worry about it, it'll come right on out. And I don't know for sure whatever happened, but I'm sure it's gone by now. What comes in isn't what makes us unclean, that which is outside of us. Your circumstances are not what defile you. Being poor doesn't make you unclean. Being rich doesn't make you unclean. Your family, regardless of whether they are a joy or a frustration, doesn't defile you. Your boss, your neighbors, your co-workers. Believe it or not, even your government does not defile you, regardless of how you may feel about it at any given moment. Now, how you respond to those things, what comes out of you in response to those things, that can be what defiles. That can be the thing that leaves you unclean. But these things by themselves have no power. They simply go in and pass through and go out. It's what we do in response that matters. When I was a child, like probably many of you, I had to take piano lessons. And I did my mandatory 3 or 4 years of piano lessons from Mrs. Gerwig. Now, Mrs. Gerwig was also the rather jolly, white-haired organist at my church. down at Mrs. Gerwig's house and drop me off, and I would go in and have my little half-hour piano lesson. And then she would take a little piece of paper, half sheet of paper, and she would tape it in the back of my piano book. And I was to write on that piece of paper all of my practice time. It had a little chart on it. And I would chart all of my practice for the week. Now, the reason for that was not because she wanted to check to see if I was an obedient little child. It's because she knew that the key to learning to play piano is not going to her house and listening to her talk about piano. It was actually getting on the piano myself every day and practicing those notes, practicing those tunes, practicing how I played them. That's what makes a piano player, right? You can study it all day long, but it's only when you actually do it, sit down, put your fingers on the keys, and play the piano. Mrs. Gerwig understood that. And so the whole purpose of the chart wasn't to see if I was an obedient little boy. It was to help me practice, to help me understand how important the doing actually is in shaping the abilities and skills of playing the piano. Now, I didn't stick with the piano. I took up guitar instead. That's fine. The truth is, though, I still remember enough of the basics of the piano that it helps me understand music in general. Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. That's what makes us into the people that we are. And it works in the heart and soul as well. The reason that weekly worship is important is because it actually changes us. It reminds us of whose we are. It builds in that pattern of constantly stepping back and remembering that I am a child of God. I am dependent on God. The reason reading the scriptures on a daily basis and praying on a daily basis is important isn't because God has a little sheet in the back of your book in heaven. It's because that's what shapes you. Just like practicing the piano is what develops those skills and abilities that make you able to play that music. So too, practicing that time with God, practicing attentiveness to Him, are the things that will make you able to face the difficulties and struggles of life, to play that music that is the life of service to God in the course of this world. Just like those piano lessons would develop muscle memory in my fingers, so the repetition of our prayers and our reading of the scriptures and our worship develop soul memory, if you will, so that we can fall into those patterns. You guys know I swim a lot. And I have a pretty decent stroke for an old guy. But it's not because I think about every detail of the stroke. It's because my muscles have learned to do it. And so I don't have to think about it in order for my body to do it. Any golfer will tell you the same thing. You have to golf regularly and consistently so that your muscles learn those actions and movements on a consistent basis. Today's lesson from James reminds us of the same basic truth. He says, be doers of the word and not hearers only. You see, if all we're doing is hearing, it's just another way of just taking it in. It may not go to the sewer, but it goes, I don't know, wherever those odd socks go. The Tupperware bottom that never seems to match up with the lids and drawer. They go in, they just go somewhere, and they're not. What becomes part of us, what becomes our character, are the things that we do. That's why James says be doers, not just doers generically, but doers of the word. doers of that which God calls us to do, because that's what will shape us into the people God intends for us to be. And if we are not doers, we're deceiving ourselves. We're not actually being changed. You see, what defiles is what's on the inside. It's important for several reasons. Just very quickly. It's that what we do is an expression of what's on the inside. But what we do also changes what's on the inside. You see, most of us aren't going to change by simply sitting around and thinking about it and wishing it was different. We actually change by choosing to behave differently. That's how we are designed. That's how God works in us. And so what we do, being doers, it demonstrates what's on the inside. It changes us. And, of course, it also affects the lives of others. God has given us these wondrous abilities to speak, to use words of love and care and kindness, to reach out with our hands to the care of others. And what we do affects them. But also what we do in private matters. What did Jesus tell us about praying alone in our room? Your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And the reward is that we become more Christ-like. We become more and more His children. We don't change that like you change paint on a wall. We change it by changing our behavior, by making that deliberate choice. As we begin this fall season, I would encourage you to be thinking about, what do you want to build into the choices you make in terms of your schedule, your time, your effort, your energy, how you expend all of that in a way that's going to allow God to shape you as His children. So what you do is going to shape you in some way. The question is what? How do you want to be saved? And let me make a suggestion to you. It may sound trite, but I think it works. And that is, fake it till you make it. Here's what I mean by that. You may wake up some Sunday mornings and, you know what? I'm just not feeling it today. I think I'll wait, and I'll go next Sunday when maybe God will make me feel it. And I'll feel like going. No, that's not the way we work. We work by making that choice apart from the feeling. And then that action changes the feeling over time. You may not want to say a kind word to that obnoxious neighbor down the street. But making that choice, speak that word of kindness and love, changes what's in you. It may not change them. Don't worry about that. They're God's problem. But it can change what's in you. And that will never change simply by wishing, gee, I felt better. I wish I felt better about my neighbor. I know I should feel more loving toward my neighbor. The way that's going to change is by you choosing to behave in a loving way toward that neighbor. That's how God is at work in our lives. That's what it means to be doers of the word and not just hearers. And that's what it takes to change what is on the inside so that it may not be